All right, take care. All right.
All right, you too,
Blake. Right. Okay, on the phone line, we got Professor Manuel Ampin, who is probably the fact finder and historian out of California. How you doing today, Professor? You there?
I'm doing great, Brother Paul. Yeah, everything is going well, brother.
Good. Thanks for being available. And
no problem.
On independent.
Before them, or 18 or 24, and you have just one that's of a different ethnic background, that doesn't make you that at all, because people judge you on your physical appearance, your physiognomy, your phenotype, and they don't. So you can claim to be what you want, but your genes choose before you do. So the reality is Barack Obama is clearly the first president that is biracial in terms of having a African parent, and the other ones did not. You have to go back many, many generations, and this is why it makes no sense to promote all of these myths, because America has been a racist country from the very beginning. Slavery was a hallmark of American life going back to the first permanent English settlement in Jamestown, and it is clear that the Constitution justifies and promotes and condones slavery in its conception. And so black people had no rights in early America. In fact, every one of the colonies was slave-owning colonies. And even when the northern colonies that became states began to gradually eliminate slavery, even when that did happen, black people in the northern states had no rights. You're talking about strict racial segregation and black people having no rights in the north. So to assume or to suggest that a black person would be in the council making decisions about the direction of the new country is preposterous. Now, the other thing that's associated with this outrageous myth, as people float these crazy emails around, is the another painting. This is a painting, or in some cases, it's a photograph of the back of the $2 bill.
I just talked to him about this, but yeah, I know where you're going. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Take your time, Professor. Talk about this $2 bill that
in
has
the back of the $2 bill.
Okay. So
are we recording this?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in this foolishness that's promoted, is that what people do? They send out an email and they want to shock people. Oh, Barack Obama is not the first black president. Okay. So then they send out a photograph of the back of the $2 bill. On the back of it, the one that's more common than not, there's a lime green circle around an individual that these people claim is John Hansen, and then then they say that, look, here's the circle of the first black president of the United States, the first president period, and he is sitting in his position as the president. But wait a minute. If anybody looks at what these people circle, the person, this is somebody who's in the back of the proceedings, number one. He's way in the back. He's not even front and center. Mm-hmm. So how can the man be sitting in his position as president when he's not even an important figure in the drawing, number one? Secondly, on the back of the $2 bill, what's happening is this. People think that it's the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's not the signing. Is actually a draft that's being given by a five-man committee. And these five men, what they did was, and this included Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Washington, these five individuals, the five-man committee, they were given the task by the 56 men in the Continental Congress who came together and said, look, we need to draft a declaration, a statement that we're now fighting this war to become an independent country. So why don't we form a subcommittee so you five go and draft this this statement. So what's happened on the back of the $2 bill is a draft that's being given by the five-man committee. And this is a painting done by John Trumbull. John Trumbull was commissioned by the United States once it became an independent country. He's commissioned in 1817, so the country's already independent now, and they commissioned John Trumbull to draw what this proceeding may have looked like. Now, out of the 56 men, John Trumbull only drew about 42 in his painting. And nevertheless, what he draws was the five-man committee presenting a draft to the president of the Continental Congress. And that happened to be John Hancock. Not Hanson. This is a different John Hancock. So when people say, hey, look, you gave me back this document, but you forgot your Hancock, they mean, look, you forgot your signature.
Oh.
So John Hancock is the man, if anybody can check to take a look at it, they can see on the back of the $2 bill, a man is sitting front and center in this drawing, and he is receiving the documents from the five-man committee. That's John Hancock, who is presiding over the proceedings, and this is in 1776. John Hancock is in charge. So the myth makers say that John Hanson is the man who's president, but the person that they drew is way off to the side. But here's more of the nonsense in all of it, is that John Hanson, this myth is about John Hanson. John Hanson's not even a part of the 56 men who drafted the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't even present, nor did he sign anything. In fact, this drawing by John Trumbull shows not John Hanson, but he actually shows Thomas Hayward Jr. So that's the person that the mythmakers are circling and misrepresenting that as John Hanson. It's not John Hanson. This is Thomas Hayward Jr., the representative from South Carolina, who in the drawing is talking to his colleague from South Carolina, Arthur Middleton. So here's when it gets interesting, and people have to look at the image to see how dumb it really is. Thomas Hayward Jr. looks a little bit darker than all of the other elite white men who are gathering making decisions. And the reason why Thomas Hayward Jr. looks darker than the other individuals, not because he was black, he looks darker because his colleague, Arthur Middleton, in the painting, is leaning over, talking to him, and he's leaning over and blocking the light from above, creating a shadow on much of the face of Thomas Hayward Jr. And if anybody looks at the original painting of this draft of the Declaration of Independence, it's a huge painting that's in the Rotunda building in the U.S. Capitol. It's right on the ceiling. If anybody looks at that huge painting, you can see the details and see that the man seated is a white guy like all the rest of them. You can see the top of his forehead is totally white, and the reason why the rest of his face, from his kind of his eyes down to his mouth, looks darker is because it's a shadow. The internet people, they don't know better. All they're looking at is a dark a $2 bill with the dark green. You can't really tell any details. So rather than looking at the original rich colored painting to see that everybody in this drawing are white, they think that one person seems to be a little bit darker. Oh, okay, we got it. That must be the first black president, which makes no sense whatsoever because Thomas Hayward Jr. was white and the man is way in the back. So he's not sitting in any position of authority. He's like the other dozens of people there giving their input about how this statement should be given to the King of England.
Wow.
So it's just one silly myth after another associated with John Hanson, and John Hanson had nothing to do with the Declaration of Independence. He's not on the back of the $2 bill. There are no black people in the proceedings. Black people had no rights. Article 1, Section 2, as you were indicating, Brother Paul, indicates that black people were simply represented as 3/5 of all other human beings. And if we look at the Constitution, they basically had no rights whatsoever. And there's no possible way that any black person had any rights that white people respected in the 1780s, 1790s. Anywhere in that time period. So
they didn't even have a right to vote in 1780, did we?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
They had no right to vote.
I got some notes here. In March the 12th in 1780, a group of blacks in Massachusetts petitioned on the grounds of tax without representation in 1780. So if this man was a so-called president, then his black people couldn't even vote.
Right. And another thing I wanted to ask you, Doctor, was we had this thing, I'm a Prince Hall Mason. And I don't know if you ever heard the myth of that's Prince Hall on the back of a $2 bill. You actually have brothers that carry this $2 bill in their pocket.
For real?
And on their wallet and will not spend it. They could be hungry, cold, wet, whatever, and they will not spend this $2 bill.
Have you heard that one, Professor?
That's a new one to me.
Yeah. And I was like, when you said there was no black people in this painting.
Right. Right.
You know, our grand historian had brought this out, too, during a meeting and stuff like, look, this is not Prince Hall, our founder. This is a shadow, and the painting is here. He had documents and everything and stuff. So right. I'm kind of glad you touched on that.
Professor, what's the motive behind these type of, I mean, these if you might know, myths. What these urban myths, what can we gain? What do we gain about out of these myths?
You know, it's like people... They're just given to this Ripley's Believe It or Not information that's shocking. So people, I guess they feel that they're doing something to share information that's stunning. Something that Serena Williams said or Camille Cosby or black people are going to lose the right to vote. I remember that came out in 2007. Right. That if we don't vote, they're going to take it from us. And the people promoting it never occurred to them if they went to the Department of Justice's official website to deal with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, they would know that that would make no sense whatsoever. But what people tend to gain from, I don't know. Obviously, people are struggling, so maybe this has something to do with their low self-esteem, but it clearly has to do with their lack of research methods, that the people have done no study. They haven't been trained on how to do research. So whatever, you know, it's like little children. Whenever someone gives them something, they believe it to be true because they don't have the tools to dissect or assess the value and credibility of information that they receive. And it's really sad that just basic thinking is abandoned when people are promoting these things. You know, I tell you this, though. If there was no internet around, there's no way these myths could have gotten very far because intelligent, mature people have other things to do with their time. If they would have had to go to the copier, spend money, and make copies and send things out in the mail and make flyers, and they would have did it.
That's too much work.
I just couldn't hold back. Right. I just couldn't hold back.
So the internet, it got its pluses, it got its minuses then.
Exactly. So the plus is that we can communicate as we are today with people locally and around the world, but the minus, so it's like a knife. I mean, if you have some maturity and training, it could be very useful if you're cooking and doing other things. Mm-hmm. But also it could be deadly and dangerous, and that's how the internet is. And so unfortunately, it becomes a dangerous tool to the uninitiated people who are so gullible. Whatever you tell them, they believe it. It's just like, you know, it's the height of immaturity, and we in quotations, engage in this kind of nonsense seemingly more than any other group. So obviously we have some serious issues.
Wow. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, well, since we're talking about myths and urban myths and stuff, is it true that there are still slave laws on the federal books?
No, because... here's what these elite white men did. When they agreed on the Constitution and adopted it in 1787, they agreed that it would go into effect in March of 1789, and that's what happened. So when it goes into effect, there are five articles and sections in the Constitution that justify, promote, and condone slavery. So we mentioned Article 1, Section 2. There's also Article 1, Section 9, which is the importation tax. In other words, what they agreed to do is to say, look, you can bring in, to the general population, you can bring in any, as they say, of such persons as you deem necessary. They mean enslaved Africans. You can import them in, and this cannot be prohibited by Congress. for the next 21 years. There can't even be a debate on this issue.
Right.
But if you do bring in people, up to $10 per person must be paid into the national treasury. So they're not looking to end the slave trade. They say you can bring in anybody you want. They condone it. Also, that's Article 1, Section 9. Also, Article 4, Section 2, the Fugitive Slave Clause, meaning that if an African ran away from any state in which he or she was enslaved, even if they went and eventually ran away
to a free state,
into a free state, the citizens of the United States were obligated by the Constitution to aid in the capture and return of any African, as long as the so-called slave owner made a claim that he was the owner. And that was a constitutional obligation. But there's five of them. That's just the three more prominent ones. So what these vicious men decided to do in their compromising is never to mention the word slave or slavery in the Constitution, because they understood that this would be a public, a national, and international document. They just got through fighting an eight-year war against King George III in Britain, talking about his vicious acts against the 13 colonies. So they talked about him being a tyrant, and yet they were doing the same thing, so they didn't want to expose their own hypocrisy. So they decided not to use the word slave or slavery. They used what I call camouflage language, indirect language, so that you really wouldn't know unless you knew what the arguments were. That's why it's important to get the minutes of these debates to see what they decided to compromise and leave out. And the word slavery is not mentioned in the Constitution until, very interestingly, that it's abolished.
Mm.
It's abolished with the 13th Amendment. So with the 13th Amendment passed right after the Civil War, that's what made slavery illegal. So all of those articles and sections in the Constitution that justified slavery, they were now null and void once the 13th Amendment was passed.
Wow. So
that outlawed slavery for the first time.
Professor Manuel Ampian, a couple more questions in regard to this. How many books have you read over time? How many have you read, I should say? I want to let people know your qualifications.
Kind of hard to say, because it's books, it's essays, it's articles, it's looking at primary sources. But I can say this, though, that I've been doing firsthand or primary research in the field for since the mid-80s. So that would be about a quarter century.
Okay.
And so I say that documentation beats conversation. And I would just say this as well, is that it's always more important to go to the sources rather than deal with historical hearsay and gossip.
Right. Go to the actual documents. And you had never seen anything that would have said John Hanson was a black man at all.
No. It makes no sense. There are no black people who can even give input in any of these councils. And by the way, most of the men in the Continental Congress, most of them were slave owners who saw no humanity in black people.
Mm.
So they're not going to have somebody in their midst of African descent, let alone being the president of the group. This is preposterous. But these are people who obviously have a low self-esteem and was always looking for a black first to try to equal white positions. Well, this position doesn't mean anything. These are slave owners. Most of them.
Wow.
These are arrogant, elite white men who gave no rights to women. They gave no rights to Native Americans. Africans had no rights, and they gave no rights. They extended no rights, no political rights to poor whites. And the reason why is because they believed that poor whites, if they didn't have enough land, then they should not be given the right to vote, because if they were given that right, they would use their vote irresponsibly because they wouldn't have anything to lose. That's
wow.
What their argument was, is that we can't extend rights to these people. So poor whites could not even vote until the 10th U.S. presidential election. So the first 9 elections, even poor white males couldn't even vote and had no voice.
Mm.
So there was no democracy even for poor white men who didn't own enough property. And clearly women had no rights. Women couldn't even vote, to my white women, couldn't even vote in America until 1920.
Mm. Wow.
So we three-fifths of a man, we claim that it's a black president.
Yeah, I mean, it's a violation of common sense. It's a complete disrespect of the tradition of virulent white racism in America, that black people weren't even considered human beings at the time who had any rights that white people were bound to respect. As a matter of fact, black people couldn't even, they couldn't vote. Black people could not be jurors. They could not testify against white people. They certainly couldn't hold any office.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is objective, verifiable information. Anybody could read this and know that these are facts. You don't just have some black person that emerges all of a sudden. As a matter of fact, they didn't have to be politically correct about anything. I mean, who would they be attempting to appease by putting a black person in position like that anyway? So, but it's like, you know, the myths are really dumb. And we really, you know, what we need, Brother Rob and Brother Paul, we need more listeners,
mm-hmm.
more people in the community to join a campaign that I've been a part of now for 20 years. And it's a campaign against the spread of ignorance.
Campaign against the spread of ignorance.
That's what we need.
I like that. I like
that. Well, since we're on that subject, campaign. I wanted to ask you something, you being a historian. Christopher Columbus.
Oh, we know. He already talked about that.
I want to know. I just want to
know. We had him on last year. We got it on the website. But you can refresh us, though.
Yeah.
You know how you feel about Christopher Columbus, the myth on that. Telling him what he Go ahead. Finish up your question, Rob.
That's it.
Christopher Columbus. What do you – and I know we still got it up on our website from, mm-hmm. from the previous Columbus Day from last year.
But I wanted to refresh your course.
Refresh your course. Rob need a refresher course on – good saint.
How great of a man he really was, and how he discovered this land and this country, and he shook everybody's hands, and
we celebrate him.
We celebrate him on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you this. Here's what I did this past fourth Thursday in November. I went to Alcatraz Island right here in the San Francisco Bay.
Mm.
Because every year, you have the Native American group of tribes that come together to have, it's not Thanksgiving, it's Thanks-taking.
Thanks-taking.
So they have an annual Thanks-taking
event.
And you know what? It was, so to leave from the San Francisco Pier out to Alcatraz, you know, the boat ride is, I don't know, maybe about 15 minutes. But the first boat left at 4:45 in the morning because it's a sunrise gathering, and it was cold, it was dark, it was raining, but it was exciting. And you know what? There was at least 10,000-12,000 or more people there.
Wow!
And the Native Americans there are energized to promote their culture in Good. Opposition to this outrageous Columbus Day, and the performers were performing without shoes, and the men were performing without shirts. It's cold, it's rain. I mean, it rained the whole time. It's pretty phenomenal to see this, but they understand the reality, and what the listeners should know is that Columbus was celebrated throughout North America, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean by many people in many countries, and I remember that they, in this hemisphere, were gearing up for probably the biggest celebration in the history of the Western Hemisphere in October of 1992. Mm-hmm. This would have been the quincentennial, or the 500-year celebration of Columbus's first landing in the Bahamas. Now, he never stepped foot in North America. He had no idea that this place was even here. The man was confused, disoriented, and lost. He thought he was somewhere near India. He had no idea he was in another part of the world. He lands on the Bahama Islands October 12, 1492, so the celebration was going to commemorate that. But that's when this huge multinational celebration was turned upside down. So Native Americans and African scholars led the way. They said, look, you can't celebrate this man. He's an international criminal. He enslaved Native Americans. And he also initiated the transatlantic slave trade.
Hmm.
It was Columbus himself, who's the captain of those initial three ships, who ordered the kidnapping and the capture and the enslavement of Native Americans. He did that. We know that because of his own writings in his own journal and the firsthand accounts of men like Bartolomé de las Casas, because de las Casas was with Columbus and the other conquistadors, the Spanish conquerors, and he detailed his eyewitness accounts of how they slaughtered tons of Native Americans. And de las Casas' work is called Devastation of the Indies. So that book was brought out again. Columbus's own journals were brought out in 1992, as well as the work of scholars like Jack Forbes, a Native American scholar, and so many others. And so it went from a celebration to only a commemoration. People said you can commemorate that the man traveled, but what are you celebrating, death and destruction? Mm. It went from a celebration to a commemoration to ultimately a condemnation. The man is now condemned as an international criminal, and that's why you have different cities, like the city of Berkeley right here in the Oakland area where I'm at, that now is no such thing as Columbus Day. It's Indigenous Peoples Day.
Good.
Then you have countries like Venezuela, Indigenous Resistance Day. But the resistance that we have in the country are the fact that you got people who live in places like Columbus, Georgia, or Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
You got city-sponsored celebrations, and they're not willing to give it up. And
right.
So you got major resistance to this myth of how great Columbus was, but clearly the man is condemned in most quarters around the country. So this is another big-time myth, but has been thoroughly attacked in one by one segment of the population after another based on records and evidence, and not just people today criticizing him for things that we only see as bad today, but nobody had problems with then. No, people had problems then as well.
Right, right.
And we're just looking at what is obviously a crime to kill off people just, and, you know, he wanted to enslave them to maximize profits by making Native Americans mine for gold. That was one of his motives. So, you know, there's a lot of myths that we have to continue to tackle.
Professor Manuel Ampan, how can people find out about your research? What's the website they need to go to?
They can go directly to my site. It's my name is manuampim.com. That's MANUAMPIM. manuampim.com. And all of my details are there, as well as my ongoing primary research and the work I do in archives, museums, institutes around the U.S., as well as the systematic field work that I do in Africa every year. Well, you know, we take people to Africa to go to the sites, go to the sources, the pyramids, temples, tombs, the local villages, so that we can know what our culture is and not have to guess or rely on internet myth makers who will tell us anything. So that's how they can reach
me. You're also on Facebook, too, I think. I think you're one of my Facebook friends.
Exactly. I'm on Facebook. People can check me out on Facebook, and we can do the Facebook friend thing. And also I have some of my video clips on YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, on YouTube. Good.
Yeah,
good. Man, I gotta come out there and see you one day, man. I really do. We've been talking for a while, and I got to come out there and see you. You've always been helpful. When I call you up, you're available, and I know you in beautiful Northern California where you got a lot of sunshine and you got a lot of stuff to do, but you make out time for us, and I really appreciate that. So I'm going to make sure if you got any materials, I'm going to go ahead and purchase some materials off your website. I don't know if you got anything there I can get. But
yeah, you got something.
Yeah, I got to do that because you've been a great help. And my man Keedy over there living in Black speaks highly about you all the time.
Well, I appreciate that, brother. And, you know, that's what I'm here for, because I would just say this. Yeah, as a historian, many of my colleagues, they like talking to each other in these academic forums and conferences, and they read these, to me, really not-so-important papers that don't say anything about anything. So rather than spend all my time with just academe folks, there's a place for that, but some folks, that's their only focus, because in the absence of a true historian, then what happens is these community, quote, historians emerge and tell anybody anything. So to me, the training has to be real and relevant to help teach and direct the community so that we have the best, relevant, and most up-to-date information, because the historian should do that and not a person who hasn't received any training. And not only that, everybody doesn't have to have training, but they just lack basic thinking skills. That's the other issue. You don't have to be trained to have basic thinking skills. You know?
So, folks, bottom line, John Hanson was not a black president.
He said basic thinking skills.
Bottom line. And, I mean, for real, all you got to do is go to Liberia's website, Liberia Congress. They have the same picture there. That'll solve everything. If you don't believe what Professor Ampin has said, which he's been documented, you know, his stuff is stellar work. Let's go to Liberia's website and type in Senator John Hanson. And unless this man lived to be 150 years old or something like that, and still, the picture's right there. Hey, I appreciate you so much.
Well, but I appreciate it too. And then, is it possible that those who didn't get a chance to listen live that can still listen at the audio of this?
Yes, I'm uploaded to either tonight or tomorrow. I'm uploaded, definitely.
Okay.
Yes, right, and I'll send you a copy of it too, because we want to get the word out on this. Unfortunately, we went to a museum, and it's a great museum, and I don't think the museum might have endorsed this thing, but the person who gave the tour was a great person too. Great person. She mentioned it to the kids, and that got me to really thinking that we need to talk about this, Dan.
Yeah, because I really appreciate that, brother, because, you know, there's a lot of folks who it wouldn't mean anything to them. They'll be off telling their neighbor about the new news. But you didn't do that. You said, wait a minute, this sounds quite suspicious.
Yeah, one of the most important books I read, and I ain't going to say most important, real good for history. I brought it into work today. It was John Hope Franklin, From Slavery to Freedom, A History of African Americans. I'm sure you heard about it.
Yes, it's a classic.
Classic. And I read that as like my Bible for guidance on history. I mean, he laid down, it's a thick book. And I read that thing from front to the end, and along with other books that I'm read. And for him not to mention it, and for Carter G. Woodson, the father of black history, not to mention it, it just made me wonder, like, something don't sound right here. And so calling you up and calling my good friend Franklin Fadow, who's another historian, and get the same type of information from both of you two, and then going on doing my own separate investigation, it confirms it. So I just hope our people do the independent research.
That's what it comes down to. Yeah. And just last thing, and it's clear that we always have to look at the credibility of the source, and that's what's crucial here. So all information is not necessarily accurate, and all information cannot be treated the same way. So people just have to be a little bit more critical. Just because something is said or written doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's like anybody who happens to be a juror. Just because a witness is called to the stand doesn't mean that their witness is automatically credible. We have to weigh the witness's credibility and what he or she says or presents. And in the context of the overall case, we have to look at what the person's motive was for saying what they said, and so many other things with the background. So that doesn't really require training. It just requires to be critical thinkers.
And when this kind of information gets out there and it's printed, does that really, it hits with credibility, integrity of the people that's carrying the message?
I think with the internet, you know, there's people who, like, you know, if people see things on the net, like on Wikipedia, they think that those are articles written by God. They're not written by God. These are people who can put anything out there. There's the problem with on the online media, let's just say Wikipedia in this case, there's no standards.
Mm-hmm.
There's no background check. Anybody can post. And then if somebody doesn't like what's posted, they can change it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so this is not how a serious academic environment works. You got anonymous people saying anything they want behind the shield of a computer, and that's generally what happens. And so they won't ever reveal who they really are. If they did, if they had to do that, then they wouldn't be so bold in their attacks on black scholars and on other subjects. But as long as they can be anonymous and they become big and bold and bad, and that's generally what happens. But yeah, the problem is because it's written, people think. This is why I'm always teaching the importance of primary research, and I have, if people go to my site, they'll see that I also have a primary research training course to teach people the tools, the techniques of firsthand research methodology. This is so important because then people will be able to answer their own questions about the world rather than believing some silly forwarded email that's always shocking. And then, you know, all these silly things. And we spend so much time with this nonsense. And I bring this up in class. It depends. You know, some of the U.S., mainly I'm teaching Africana studies, but with the U.S. history classes, everybody has to take my class. So the student profiles are different in terms of their ethnic background.
Okay.
So I'll deal with the John Hanson myth. Depends on how many African Americans are in the class.
Okay.
Generally, it may be out of, let's say, 40 to 50 students per class, there may be 20-25% African Americans. So I already know that not maybe all, but some of them have heard of it.
Right.
How many of you heard of this that George Washington wasn't the first president? How many of you?
I heard that.
Then I kind of, that's okay, look, let me share this with you. But it depends on who's in the room. But these are the things that we really have to promote and spread more and more. And then, you know, when I was thinking about right before you called how to promote this more, I remember a sister had sent me an email, and I forgot all about it, early this year.
Mm-hmm.
I had sent her years ago the information that shows that the John Hanson myth, being the so-called first president, was nothing but a myth. And she had asked what I posted on my website. You know, after speaking with your brothers today, I'm going to do that. I'm going to post it on the site so that more people can get the information, because we really have to help get a law passed against the spread of ignorance. And that's one of our big tasks in 2012.
All right. Good. That's a good task to work on.
Sure is.
Thank you, Professor Manu and Penn, man. You've always been great, man. We keep in contact. I'll send you a copy, too.
Appreciate that. Thank you, brother.
All right. God bless you. Yes, take care. All right. Bye. Take a break. Be back. A lot to soak in right there, Rob. A lot of information to soak in.
Hmm.
It didn't make you upset, did it?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It made me very happy. I hope it didn't make nobody else upset.
Well, it's history.
It's history and it's
documented.
Documented, factual. Hey, like Farrakhan. Go look it up for yourself.
Yeah. We'll take a break. WBSLP 103.7 Muskegon. Muskegon Heights. Be right back for the closing. Talk about the DJ Q89 Toys for Kids. Be right back.
All right. This one goes out to all lovers in the house.